Also look. She pointed proudly at her feet, which were now adorned with the shoes of Terpsichore from Caligula's private collection. You mounted an amphibious assault on an enemy fleet, I said. For a pair of shoes? Lavinia huffed. Not just for the shoes, obviously. She tap danced a routine that would have made Savian Glover proud. Also to save the camp, and the nature spirits, and Michael Cahale's commandos. Hazel held up her hands to stop the overflow of information. Wait. Not to be a killjoy, I mean, you did an amazing thing. But you still deserted your post, Lavinia. I certainly didn't give you permission. I was acting on Praetor's orders, Lavinia said haughtily. In fact, Reyna helped. She was knocked out for a while, healing, but she woke up in time to instill us with the power of Bellona, right before we boarded those ships. Made us all strong and stealthy and stuff. Reyna? I yelped. Where is she? Right here, called the Praetor. I didn't know how I'd missed seeing her. She'd been hiding in plain sight among the group of survivors talking with Thalia. I suppose I'd been too focused on Thalia, wondering whether or not she was going to kill me, and whether or not I deserved it. Reyna limped over on crutches, her broken leg now in a full cast, covered with signatures like Felipe, Latoya, and Sneeze Wart. Considering all she'd been through, Reyna looked great. Though she still had a hunk of hair missing from the raven attack, and her maroon sweater wrap was going to need a few days at the magical dry cleaner. Thalia smiled, watching her friend come toward us. Then Thalia met my eyes, and her smile wavered. Her expression turned bleak. She gave me a curt nod. Not hostile, just sad. Acknowledging that we had things to talk about later. Hazel exhaled. Thank the gods. She gave Reyna a delicate hug, careful not to unbalance her. Is it true about Lavinia acting on your orders? Reyna glanced at our pink-haired friend. The Praetor's pained expression said something like, I respect you a lot, but I also hate you for being right. Yes, Reyna managed to say. Plan L was my idea. Lavinia and her friends acted on my orders. They performed heroically. Lavinia beamed. See? I told you. The assembled crowd murmured in amazement, as if, after a day full of wonders, they had finally witnessed something that could not be explained. There were many heroes today, Diana said, and many losses. I'm only sorry that Thalia and I couldn't get here sooner. We were only able to rendezvous with Lavinia and Reyna's forces after their raid, then destroy the second wave of undead who were waiting in the sewers. She waved dismissively, as if annihilating Tarquin's main force of ghouls and zombies had been an afterthought. Gods, I missed being a god. You also saved me, I said. You're here. You're actually here. She took my hand and squeezed it. Her flesh felt warm and human. I couldn't remember the last time my sister had shown me such open affection. Let's not celebrate quite yet, she warned. You have many wounded to attend to. The camp's medics have set up tents outside the city. They will need every healer. Including you, brother. Lavinia grimaced. And we'll have to have more funerals. Gods, I wish. Look! Hazel shrieked, her voice an octave higher than usual. Arion came trotting up the hill, a hulking human form draped over his back. Oh no. My heart wilted. I had flashbacks of Tempest, the Ventus horse, depositing Jason's body on the beach in Santa Monica. No, I couldn't watch. Yet I couldn't look away. The body on Arion's back was unmoving and steaming. Arion stopped and the form slipped off one side. But it did not fall. Frank Zhang landed on his feet. He turned toward us. His hair was singed to a fine black stubble. His eyebrows were gone. His clothes had completely burned away except for his briefs and his praetor's cape, giving him a disturbing resemblance to Captain Underpants. He looked around, his eyes glazed and unfocused.
"Hey, everybody," he croaked.
Then he fell on his face. Chapter 40. Stop making me cry, or buy me some new tear ducts. My old ones broke down. Priorities change when you're rushing a friend to emergency medical care. It no longer seemed important that we had won a major battle, or that I could finally take Become a Zombie off my alert calendar. Lavinia's heroism and her new dancing shoes were momentarily forgotten. My guilt about Thalia's presence was also pushed aside. She and I didn't exchange so much as a word as she rushed in to help, along with all the rest of us. I even failed to register that my sister, who'd been at my side only a moment before, had quietly vanished. I found myself barking orders at legionnaires, directing them to grate some unicorn horn, get me some nectar stat, and rush Frank Zhang to the medical tent. Hazel and I stayed at Frank's bedside until well past dawn, long after the other medics assured us he was out of danger. None of them could explain how he had survived, but his pulse was strong. His skin was remarkably unburned, and his lungs were clear. The arrow punctures in his shoulder and the dagger wound in his gut had given us some trouble, but they were now stitched up, bandaged, and healing well. Frank slept fitfully, muttering and flexing his hands as if he were still reaching for an imperial throat to strangle. "Where's his firewood?" Hazel fretted. "Should we look for it? If it's lost in the—"
"I don't think so," I said. I saw it burn up.
That's what killed Caligula. Frank's sacrifice.
And how?
Hazel put her fist to her mouth to block a sob. She hardly dared to ask the question.
Will he be okay?
I had no answer for her. Years ago, Juno had decreed that Frank's lifespan was tied to that stick. I wasn't there to hear her exact words. I try not to be around Juno any more than I have to. But she'd said something about Frank being powerful and bringing honor to his family, etc., though his life would be short and bright. The fates had decreed that when that piece of tinder burned up, he was destined to die. Yet now the firewood was gone, and Frank still lived. After so many years keeping that piece of wood safe, he had intentionally burned it to—
"Maybe that's it,"
I muttered.
"What?"
Hazel asked. "He took control of his destiny," I said. "The only other person I've ever known to have this, firewood problem, back in the old days, was this prince named Meleager. His mom got the same kind of prophecy when he was a baby. But she never even told Meleager about the firewood. She just hid it and let him live his life. He grew up to be kind of a privileged, arrogant brat." Hazel held Frank's hand with both of hers.
"Frank could never be like that."
"I know," I said. "Anyway, Meleager ended up killing a bunch of his relatives. His mom was horrified. She went and found the piece of firewood and threw it in the fire. Boom. End of story." Hazel shuddered.
"That's horrible."
"The point is, Frank's family was honest with him. His grandmother told him the story of Juno's visit. She let him carry his own lifeline. She didn't try to protect him from the hard truth. That shaped who he is. Hazel nodded slowly. He knew what his fate would be. What his fate was supposed to be, anyway. I still don't understand how. It's just a guess, I admitted. Frank went into that tunnel knowing he might die. He willingly sacrificed himself for a noble cause. In doing so, he broke free of his fate. By burning his own tinder, he kind of, I don't know, started a new fire with it. He's in charge of his own destiny now. Well, as much as any of us are. The only other explanation I can think of is that Juno somehow released him from the fate's decree. Hazel frowned. Juno, doing someone a favor? Doesn't sound like her, I agree. She does have a soft spot for Frank, though. She had a soft spot for Jason, too. Hazel's voice turned brittle. Not that I'm complaining that Frank is alive, of course. It just seems. She didn't need to finish. Frank's survival was wonderful. A miracle. But somehow it made losing Jason feel all the more unfair and painful. As a former god, I knew all the usual responses to mortal complaints about the unfairness of dying. Death is part of life. You have to accept it. Life would be meaningless without death. The deceased will always be alive as long as we remember them. But as a mortal, as Jason's friend, I didn't find much comfort in those thoughts. Ugh. Frank's eyes fluttered open. Oh. Hazel wrapped her arms around his neck, smothering him in a hug. This wasn't the best medical practice for someone just returning to consciousness, but I let it pass. Frank managed to pat Hazel feebly on the back.
Breathe, he croaked.
Oh, sorry.
Hazel pulled away. She brushed a tear from her cheek.
You're thirsty, I bet.
She rummaged for the canteen at his bedside and tipped it toward his mouth. He took a few painful sips of nectar.
Ah.
He nodded his thanks.
So, are we good?
Hazel hiccuped a sob.
Yes. Yes, we're good. The camp is saved. Tarquin is dead. And you killed Caligula.
Eh. Frank smiled weakly. That was my pleasure.
He turned to me.
Did I miss the cake?
I stared at him.
What? Your birthday. Yesterday.
Oh, I have to admit I completely forgot about that. And the cake.
So there might still be cake in our future. Good. Do you feel a year older at least?
That's a definite yes.
You scared me, Frank Shang, Hazel said. You broke my heart when I thought.
Frank's expression turned sheepish, without him actually, you know, turning into a sheep.
I'm sorry, Hazel. It was just.
He curled his fingers, like he was trying to catch an elusive butterfly.
It was the only way. Ella told me some prophecy lines just for me. Only fire could stop the emperors. Kindled by the most precious firewood, on the bridge to camp. I guess that she meant the Caldecott Tunnel. She said, New Rome needed a new Horatius.
Horatius Cocles, I recalled.
Nice guy. He defended Rome by holding off an entire army single-handedly on the Sublician Bridge. Frank nodded.
I asked Ella not to tell anyone else. I kind of had to process it, carry it around by myself for a while.
His hand went instinctively to his belt line, where the cloth pouch no longer was.
You could have died, Hazel said.
Yeah. Life is only precious because it ends, kid.
Is that a quote? I asked.
My dad, Frank said. He was right. I just had to be willing to take the risk.
We remained quiet for a moment, considering the enormity of Frank's risk, or perhaps just marveling that Mars had actually said something wise.
How did you survive the fire? Hazel demanded.
I don't know. I remember Caligula burning up. I passed out, thought I was dead. Then I woke up on Arion's back, and now I'm here.
I'm glad.
Hazel kissed his forehead tenderly. But I'm still going to kill you later for scaring me like that. He smiled.
That's fair. Could I have another?
Maybe he was going to say kiss, or sip of nectar, or a moment alone with my best friend Apollo. But before he could finish the thought, his eyes rolled up in his head, and he started snoring. Not all of my bedside visits were so happy. As the morning stretched on, I tried to visit as many of the wounded as I could. Sometimes I could do nothing but watch, as the bodies were prepared for an anti-zombie washing and final rites. Tarquin was gone, and his ghouls seemed to have dissolved with him, but no one wanted to take any chances. Dakota, longtime centurion of the 5th Legion, had died overnight from wounds he received fighting in the city. We decided by consensus that his funeral pyre would be Kool-Aid scented. Jacob, the Legion's former standard bearer and my former archery student, had died at the Caldecott Tunnel when he took a direct hit from a Myrmica's acidic spray. The magic golden eagle had survived, as magic items tend to do, but not Jacob. Terrell, the young woman who had snatched up the standard before it could hit the ground, had stayed at Jacob's side until he passed. So many more had perished. I recognized their faces, even if I didn't know their names. I felt responsible for every single one. If I'd just done more, just acted more quickly, just been godlier. My hardest visit was to Don the Fawn. He'd been brought in by a squad of Nereids who recovered him from the wreckage of the Imperial yachts. Despite the danger, Don had stayed behind to make sure the sabotage was done right. Unlike what happened to Frank, the Greek fire explosions had ravaged poor Don. Most of the goat fur had burned away from his legs. His skin was charred. Despite the best healing music his fellow fawns could offer, and being covered with glistening healing goo, he must have been in terrible pain. Only his eyes were the same. Bright and blue and jumping from spot to spot. Lavinia knelt next to him, holding his left hand, which for some reason was the only part of him left unscathed. A group of dryads and fauns stood nearby, at a respectful distance, with Prangel the healer, who had already done everything he could. When Don saw me, he grimaced, his teeth speckled with bits of ash.
Hey, Apollo, got any spare change?
I blinked back tears. Oh, Don. Oh, my sweet, stupid fawn. I knelt at his bedside opposite Lavinia. I scanned the horrors of Don's condition, desperately hoping I could see something to fix, something the other medics had missed. But of course, there was nothing. The fact Don had survived this long was a miracle.
It's not so bad, Don rasped. Doc gave me some stuff for the pain.
Haritos cherry soda, said Prangel. I nodded. That was powerful pain medicine indeed for satyrs and fauns, only to be used in the most serious of cases, lest the patients become addicted.
I wanted.
Don groaned, his eyes becoming brighter.
Save your strength, I pleaded.
For what?
He croaked a grotesque version of a laugh.
I wanted to ask, does it hurt reincarnation?
My eyes were too blurry to see properly. I've never reincarnated, Don. When I became human, that was different, I think. But I hear reincarnation is peaceful, beautiful. The dryads and fauns nodded and murmured in agreement, though their expressions betrayed a mixture of fear, sorrow, and desperation, making them not the best sales team for the great unknown. Lavinia cupped her hands around the fawn's fingers.
You're a hero, Don. You're a great friend.
Hey. Cool.
He seemed to have trouble locating Lavinia's face.
I'm scared, Lavinia.
I know, babe.
I hope. Maybe I come back as a hemlock. That would be like an action hero plant, right?
Lavinia nodded, her lips quivering.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Hey, Apollo, you know the difference between a fawn and a satyr?
He smiled a little wider, as if ready to deliver the punchline. His face froze that way. His chest stopped moving. Dryads and fawns began to cry. Lavinia kissed the fawn's hand and pulled a piece of bubblegum from her bag and reverently slipped it into Don's shirt pocket. A moment later, his body collapsed with a noise like a relieved sigh, crumbling into fresh loam. In the spot where his heart had been, a tiny sapling emerged from the soil. I immediately recognized the shape of those miniature leaves. Not a hemlock, a laurel. The tree I had created from poor Daphne, and whose leaves I had decided to make into wreaths. The laurel, the tree of victory. One of the dryads glanced at me.
Did you do that?
I shook my head. I swallowed the bitter taste from my mouth. The only difference between a satyr and a fawn, I said, is what we see in them and what they see in themselves. Plant this tree somewhere special. I looked up at the dryads. Tend it and make it grow healthy and tall. This was Don the Fawn, a hero. Chapter 41. If you hate me, fine. Just don't hit me in the gut. Or, well, anywhere. The next few days were almost as hard as battle itself. War leaves a huge mess that cannot simply be addressed with a mop and a bucket. We cleared the rubble and shored up the most precarious damaged buildings. We put out fires, both literal and figurative. Terminus had made it through the battle, though he was weak and shaken. His first announcement was that he was formally adopting little Julia. The girl seemed delighted, though I wasn't sure how Roman law would work out adoption by statute. Tyson and Ella were safely accounted for. Once Ella learned that I hadn't messed up the summoning after all, she announced that she and Tyson were going back to the bookstore to clean up the mess, finish the Sibylline books, and feed the cat. Not necessarily in that order. Oh, and she was also gratified Frank was alive. As for me, I got the feeling she was still making up her mind. Peaches left us once more to go help the local dryads and fawns, but he promised us
Peaches,
which I took to mean that we would see him again soon.
With Thalia's help, Reyna somehow managed to find One Eye and Short Ears, the abused Pegasi from the Emperor's chariot. She talked to them in soothing tones, promised them healing, and convinced them to come back with her to camp, where she spent most of her time dressing their wounds and providing them with good food and plenty of open air. The animals seemed to recognize that Reyna was a friend of their immortal forefather, the great Pegasus himself. After what they'd been through, I doubted they would have trusted anyone else to care for them. We didn't count the dead. They weren't numbers. They were people we had known, friends we had fought with. We lit the funeral pyres all on one night at the base of Jupiter's temple and shared the traditional feast for the dead to send our fallen comrades off to the underworld. The Lares turned out in full force until the hillside was a glowing field of purple, ghosts outnumbering the living. I noticed that Reyna stood back and let Frank officiate. Praetor Zhang had quickly regained his strength. Dressed in full armor and his maroon cloak, he gave his eulogy while the legionnaires listened with awed reverence, as one does when the speaker has recently sacrificed himself in a fiery explosion and then somehow made it out alive with his underwear and cape intact. Hazel helped too, going through the ranks and comforting those who were crying or looking shell-shocked. Reyna stayed at the edge of the crowd, leaning on her crutches, gazing wistfully at the legionnaires as if they were loved ones she hadn't seen in a decade and now barely recognized. As Frank finished his speech, a voice next to me said, "Hey." Thalia Grace wore her usual black and silver. In the light of the funeral pyres, her electric blue eyes turned piercing violet. Over the past few days, we had spoken a few times, but it had all been surface talk. Where to bring supplies, how to help the wounded. We had avoided the subject. "Hey," I said, my voice hoarse. She folded her arms and stared at the fire. "I don't blame you, Apollo. My brother." She hesitated, steadying her breath. "Jason made his own choices. Heroes have to do that." Somehow having her not blame me only made me feel guiltier and more unworthy. Ugh. Human emotions were like barbed wire. There was just no safe way to grab hold of them or get through them. "I'm so sorry," I said at last. "Yeah, I know." She closed her eyes as if listening for a distant sound. A wolf cry in the forest, perhaps? "I got Reyna's letter a few hours before Diana received your summons. Anora, one of the breeze nymphs. She plucked it out of the mail and flew it to me personally. So dangerous for her, but she did it anyway." Thalia picked at one of the buttons on her lapel. "Iggy and the Stooges, a band older than she was by several generations. We came as fast as we could, but still. I had some time to cry and scream and throw things." I remained very still. I had vivid memories of Iggy Pop throwing peanut butter, ice cubes, watermelons, and other dangerous objects at his fans during his concerts. I found Thalia more intimidating than him by far. "It seems so cruel," she continued. "We lose someone and finally get them back, only to lose them again." I wondered why she used the word "we." She seemed to be saying that she and I shared this experience, the loss of an only sibling. But she had suffered so much worse. My sister couldn't die. I couldn't lose her permanently. Then, after a moment of disorientation, like I'd been flipped upside down, I realized she wasn't talking about me losing someone. She was talking about Artemis, Diana. Was she suggesting that my sister missed me, even grieved for me as Thalia grieved for Jason? Thalia must have read my expression. The goddess has been beside herself, she said. I mean that literally. Sometimes she gets so worried she splits into two forms, Roman and Greek, right in front of me. She'll probably get mad at me for telling you this, but she loves you more than anyone else in the world. A marble seemed to have lodged in my throat. I couldn't speak, so I just nodded. Diana didn't want to leave camp so suddenly like that, Thalia continued. But you know how it is. Gods can't stick around. Once the danger to New Rome had passed, she couldn't risk overstaying her summons. Jupiter, Dad, wouldn't approve. I shivered. How easy it was to forget that this young woman was also my sister, and Jason was my brother. At one time, I would have discounted that connection. They're just demigods, I would have said. Not really family. Now I found the idea hard to accept for a different reason. I didn't feel worthy of that family. Or Thalia's forgiveness. Gradually, the funeral picnic began to break up. Romans drifted off in twos and threes, heading for New Rome, where a special nighttime meeting was being held at the Senate House. Sadly, the valley's population was so reduced that the entire legion and the citizenry of New Rome could now fit inside that one building. Reyna hobbled over to us. Thalia gave her a smile. So, Praetor Ramirez Arellano, you ready? Yes, Reyna answered without hesitation. Though I wasn't sure what she was ready for. Do you mind if... She nodded at me. Thalia gripped her friend's shoulder. Of course. See you at the Senate House. She strode away into the darkness. Come on, Lester. Reyna winked. Limp with me. The limping was easy. Even though I was healed, I tired easily. It was no problem to walk at Reyna's pace. Her dogs, Aurum and Argentum, weren't with her, I noticed. Perhaps because Terminus didn't approve of deadly weapons inside the city limits. We made our way slowly down the road from Temple Hill toward New Rome. Other legionnaires gave us a wide berth, apparently sensing we had private business to discuss. Reyna kept me in suspense until we reached the bridge spanning the Little Tiber. I wanted to thank you, she said. Her smile was a ghost of the one she'd had on the hillside of Sutro Tower, when I'd offered to be her boyfriend. That left me in no doubt as to what she meant. Not, thank you for helping to save the camp, but thank you for giving me a good laugh. No problem, I grumbled. I don't mean it in a negative way. Seeing my dubious look, she sighed and stared out at the dark river, its ripples curling silver in the moonlight. I don't know if I can explain this. My whole life, I've been living with other people's expectations of what I'm supposed to be. Be this, be that, you know? You're talking to a former god. Dealing with people's expectations is our job description. Reyna conceded this with a nod. For years, I was supposed to be a good little sister to Hyla in a tough family situation. Then on Calypso's island, I was supposed to be an obedient servant. Then I was a pirate for a while. Then a legionnaire. Then a praetor. You do have an impressive resume, I admitted. But the whole time I've been a leader here, she forged on, I was looking for a partner. Praetors often partner up, in power. But also romantically, I mean. I thought Jason. Then for a hot minute, Percy Jackson. God's help me. I even considered Octavian. She shuddered. Everybody was always trying to ship me with somebody. Thalia, Jason, Gwen, even Frank. Oh, you'd be perfect together. That's who you need. But I was never really sure if I wanted that.
or if I just felt like I was supposed to want it. People, well-meaning, would be like, "Oh, you poor thing. You deserve somebody in your life. Date him, date her, date whoever. Find your soulmate."
She looked at me to see if I was following. Her words came out hot and fast, as if she'd been holding them in for a long time. And that meeting with Venus, that really messed me up. No demigod will heal your heart. What was that supposed to mean? Then finally, you came along. Do we have to review that part again? I am quite embarrassed enough. But you showed me. When you proposed dating?
She took a deep breath, her body shaking with silent giggles.
Oh, gods, I saw how ridiculous I'd been, how ridiculous the whole situation was. That's what healed my heart. Being able to laugh at myself again, at my stupid ideas about destiny. That allowed me to break free, just like Frank broke free of his firewood. I don't need another person to heal my heart. I don't need a partner. At least, not until and unless I'm ready on my own terms. I don't need to be force-shipped with anyone or wear anybody else's label. For the first time in a long time, I feel like a weight has been lifted from my shoulders. So thank you.
You're welcome.
She laughed. Don't you see, though? Venus put you up to the job. She tricked you into it. Because she knew you are the only one in the cosmos with an ego big enough to handle the rejection. I could laugh in your face, and you would heal.
I suspected she was right about Venus manipulating me. I wasn't so sure the goddess cared whether or not I would heal, though.
So, what does this mean for you exactly? What's next for Praetor Rhaena?
Even as I asked the question, I realized I knew the answer.
Come along to the Senate House, she said. We've got a few surprises in store.
Chapter 42. Life is uncertain. Accept presents and always eat your birthday cake.
My first surprise, a front row seat. Meg and I were given places of honor next to the senior senators and the most important citizens of New Rome and those demigods with accessibility needs. When Meg saw me, she patted the bench next to her, as if there were any other place to sit. The chamber was absolutely packed. Somehow it was reassuring to see everyone together. Even if the populace was much reduced, and the sea of white bandages could have caused snow blindness. Rhaena limped into the chamber right behind me. The entire assembly came to its feet. They waited in respectful silence as she made her way to her praetor's seat next to Frank, who nodded at his colleague. Once she was seated, everyone else followed suit. Rhaena gestured at Frank like, "Let the fun begin."
"So," Frank addressed the audience, "I call to order this extraordinary meeting of the people of New Rome and the 12th Legion. First item on the agenda, a formal thank you to all. We survived by a team effort. We've dealt a huge blow to our enemies. Tarquin is dead. Really dead. At last. 2 out of 3 emperors of the Triumvirate have been destroyed, along with their fleet and their troops. This was done at great cost. But you all acted like true Romans. We live to see another day."
There was applause, some nods, and a few cheers of "yes" and "another day." One guy in the back, who must not have been paying attention for the last week, said,
"Tarquin?"
"Second," Frank said, "I want to reassure you that I'm alive and well."
He patted his chest as if to prove it.
My fate is no longer tied to a piece of wood, which is nice. And if you would all please forget that you saw me in my underwear, I'd appreciate it.
That got some laughs. Who knew Frank could be funny on purpose?
Now, his expression turned serious. It's our duty to inform you of some personnel changes. Reyna?
He watched her quizzically, as if wondering whether she would really go through with it. Thank you, Frank. She pulled herself to her feet. Again, everyone in the assembly who could stand did. Guys, please. She gestured for us to be seated. This is hard enough. When we were all settled, she scanned the faces in the crowd. A lot of anxious, sad expressions. I suspected many people knew what was coming. I've been Praetor a long time, Reyna said. It's been an honor to serve the Legion. We've been through some rough times together. Some interesting years.
A bit of nervous laughter. Interesting was the perfect curse word.
But it's time for me to step down, she continued. So I am resigning my post as Praetor. A moan of disbelief filled the chamber, as if homework had just been assigned on a Friday afternoon. It's for personal reasons, Reyna said. Like my sanity, for instance. I need time just to be Reyna Avila Ramirez Arellano, to find out who I am outside the Legion. It may take a few years, or decades, or centuries. And so, she removed her Praetor's cloak and badge and handed them to Frank. Thalia, she called. Thalia Grace made her way down the central aisle. She winked at me as she passed. She stood before Reyna and said, Repeat after me. I pledge myself to the goddess Diana. I turn my back on the company of men, accept eternal maidenhood, and join the hunt. Reyna repeated the words. Nothing magical happened that I could see. No thunder or lightning, no silver glitter falling from the ceiling. But Reyna looked as if she'd been given a new lease on life. Which she had. Infinity years, with zero interest and no money down. Thalia clasped her shoulder. Welcome to the hunt, sister. Reyna grinned. Thanks. She faced the crowd. And thank you all. Long live Rome! The crowd rose again and gave Reyna a standing ovation. They cheered and stomped with such jubilation I was afraid the duct-taped dome might collapse on us. Finally, when Reyna was seated in the front row with her new leader, Thalia, having taken the seats of two senators who were more than happy to move, everyone turned their attention back to Frank.
Well, guys, he spread his arms. I could thank Reyna all day long. She has given so much to the Legion. She's been the best mentor and friend. She can never be replaced. On the other hand, I'm up here all alone now, and we have an empty Praetor's chair. So I'd like to take nominations for... Lavinia started the chant.
Hazel! Hazel!
The crowd quickly joined in. Hazel's eyes widened. She tried to resist when those sitting around her pulled her to her feet. But her fifth cohort fan club had evidently been preparing for this possibility. One of them produced a shield, which they hoisted Hazel onto like a saddle. They raised her overhead and marched her to the middle of the Senate floor, turning her around and chanting, Hazel! Hazel! Reyna clapped and yelled right along with them. Only Frank tried to remain neutral, though he had to hide his smile behind his fist.
Okay, settle down, he called at last. We have one nomination. Are there any other...
Hazel! Hazel!
Any objections?
Hazel! Hazel!
Then I recognize the will of the 12th Legion. Hazel Levesque, you are hereby promoted to Praetor.
More wild cheering. Hazel looked dazed as she was dressed in Reyna's old cloak and badge of office, then led to her chair. Seeing Frank and Hazel side by side, I had to smile. They looked so right together. Wise and strong and brave, the perfect praetors. Rome's future was in good hands.
Thank you, Hazel managed at last. I'll do everything I can to be worthy of your trust. Here's the thing, though. This leaves the fifth cohort without a centurion, so...
The entire fifth cohort started chanting in unison. Lavinia! Lavinia!
What?
Lavinia's face turned pinker than her hair. Oh, no. I don't do leadership.
Lavinia! Lavinia!
Is this a joke? Guys, I...
Lavinia Asimov, Hazel said with a smile. The fifth cohort read my mind. As my first act as praetor, for your unparalleled heroism in the Battle of San Francisco Bay, I hereby promote you to centurion, unless my fellow praetor has any objections.
None, Frank said.
Then come forward, Lavinia. To more applause and whistling, Lavinia approached the rostrum and got her new badge of office. She hugged Frank and Hazel, which wasn't the usual military protocol, but no one seemed to care. Nobody clapped louder or whistled more shrilly than Meg. I know because she left me deaf in one ear.
Thanks, guys, Lavinia announced. So, fifth cohort. First, we're going to learn to tap dance. Then,
thank you, Centurion, Hazel said. You may be seated.
What? I'm not kidding.
On to our next order of business, Frank said, as Lavinia skipped grumpily, if that's even possible, back to her seat. We realize the Legion will need time to heal. There's lots to be done. This summer, we will rebuild. We'll speak to Lupa about getting more recruits as quickly as possible, so we can come back from this battle stronger than ever. But for now, our fight is won, and we have to honor two people who made that possible. Apollo, otherwise known as Lester Papadopoulos, and his comrade, Meg McCaffrey.
The crowd applauded so much, I doubt many people heard Meg say,
Master, not comrade,
which was fine with me. As we stood to accept the Legion's thanks, I felt strangely uncomfortable. Now that I finally had a friendly crowd cheering for me, I just wanted to sit down and cover my head with a toga. I had done so little compared to Hazel or Reyna or Frank, not to mention all those who had died. Jason, Dakota, Don, Jacob, the Sibyl, Harpocrates, dozens more. Frank raised his hand for quiet.
Now, I know you two have another long, hard quest ahead of you. There's still one emperor who needs his podex kicked.
As the crowd chuckled, I wished our next task would be as easy as Frank made it sound. Nero's podex, yes. But there was also the small matter of Python, my old immortal enemy, presently squatting in my old holy place of Delphi.
And I understand, Frank continued, that you two have decided to leave in the morning.
We have?
My voice cracked. I'd been imagining a week or two relaxing in New Rome, enjoying the thermal baths, maybe seeing a chariot race.
Shh. Meg told me. Yes, we've decided.
That didn't make me feel any better. Also, Hazel chimed in, I know you two are planning to visit Ella and Tyson at dawn to receive prophetic help
for the next stage of your quest.
We are?
I yelped. All I could think of was Aristophanes licking his nether regions.
But tonight, Frank said, we want to honor what you two have done for this camp. Without your help, Camp Jupiter might not still be here. So we would like to present you with these gifts.
From the back of the room, Senator Larry came down the aisle carrying a big equipment bag. I wondered if the Legion had bought us a ski vacation at Lake Tahoe. Larry reached the rostrum and set down the duffel. He rummaged out the first gift and handed it to me with a grin.
It's a new bow!
Larry had missed his calling as a game show announcer. My first thought, oh, cool, I need a new bow. Then I looked more carefully at the weapon in my hands, and I squealed in disbelief.
This is mine!
Meg snorted.
Of course it is. They just gave it to you.
No. I mean, it's mine. Mine. Originally mine. From when I was a god. I held up the bow for all to ooh and ah at. A masterpiece of golden oak, carved with gilded vines that flashed in the light as if on fire. Its taut curve hummed with power. If I remembered correctly, the bowstring was woven from celestial bronze and threads from the looms of the fates, which, gosh, where did those come from? I certainly didn't steal them. The bow weighed almost nothing.
That has been in the Principia treasure room for centuries, Frank said. No one can wield it. It's too heavy to draw. Believe me, I would have if I could have. Since it was originally a gift from you to the Legion, it seemed only right we give it back. With your godly strength returning, we figured you could put it to good use.
I didn't know what to say. Usually I was against re-gifting, but in this case, I was overwhelmed with gratitude. I couldn't remember when or why I'd given the Legion this bow. For centuries, I'd passed them out like party favors. But I was certainly glad to have it back. I drew the string with no trouble at all. Either my strength was godlier than I realized, or the bow recognized me as its rightful owner. Oh, yes, I could do some damage with this beauty. Thank you, I said. Frank smiled.
I'm just sorry we didn't have any replacement combat ukuleles in storage.
From the bleachers, Lavinia grumbled.
After I went and fixed it for him, too.
But, Hazel said, carefully ignoring her new centurion, we do have a gift for Meg. Larry rummaged through his Santa bag again. He pulled out a black silk pouch about the size of a deck of playing cards. I resisted the urge to shout, Ha! My gift is bigger. Meg peeked in the pouch and gasped.
Seeds!
That would not have been my reaction, but she seemed genuinely delighted. Layla, daughter of Ceres, called out from the stands. Meg, those are very ancient. We all got together, the camp's gardeners, and collected them for you from our greenhouse storage bins. Honestly, I'm not even sure what they'll all grow into, but you should have fun finding out. I hope you can use them against the last emperor. Meg looked at a loss for words. Her lip quivered. She nodded and blinked her thanks.
Okay, then, Frank said. I know we ate at the funeral, but we need to celebrate Hazel and Lavinia's promotions, wish Reyna the best on her new adventures, and wish Apollo and Meg goodbye. And of course, we've got a belated birthday cake for Lester. Party in the mess hall!
Chapter 43. Our great opening. Win a free Inferno trip. And take a cupcake. I don't know which goodbye was hardest. At first light, Hazel and Frank met us at the coffee shop for one final thank you. Then they were off to rouse the Legion. They intended to get right to work on repairs to the camp, to take everyone's minds off the many losses before shock could set in. Watching them walk away, together down the Via Praetoria, I felt a warm certainty that the Legion was about to see a new golden age. Like Frank, the 12th Legion Fulminata would rise from the ashes, though hopefully wearing more than just their undergarments. Minutes later, Thalia and Reyna came by with their pack of gray wolves, their metal greyhounds, and their pair of rescue pegasi. Their departure saddened me as much as my sister's, but I understood their ways, those hunters, always on the move. Reyna gave me one last hug. I'm looking forward to a long vacation. Thalia laughed. Vacation. Rah-rah, I hate to tell you, but we've got hard work ahead. We've been tracking the Temesian fox across the Midwest for months now, and it hasn't been going well. Exactly, Reyna said. A vacation. She kissed Meg on the top of her head. You keep Lester in line, okay? Don't let him get a big head just because he's got a nice new bow. You can count on me, Meg said. Sadly, I had no reason to doubt her. When Meg and I left the cafe for the last time, Bombilo actually cried. Behind his gruff exterior, the two-headed barista turned out to be a real sentimentalist. He gave us a dozen scones, a bag of coffee beans, and told us to get out of his sight before he started bawling again. I took charge of the scones. Meg, God's help me, took the coffee. At the gates of camp, Lavinia waited, chewing her bubble gum while she polished her new centurion badge. This is the earliest I've been up in years, she complained. I'm going to hate being an officer. The sparkle in her eyes told a different story. You'll do great, Meg said. As Lavinia bent to hug her, I noticed a stippled rash running down Ms. Asimov's left cheek and neck, unsuccessfully covered by some foundation. I cleared my throat. Did you perhaps sneak out last night to see Poison Oak? Lavinia blushed adorably. Well, I'm told that my centurionship makes me very attractive. Meg looked concerned. You're going to have to invest in some calamine lotion if you keep seeing her. Hey, no relationship is perfect, Lavinia said. At least with her, I know the problems right up front. We'll figure it out. I had no doubt she would. She hugged me and ruffled my hair. You'd better come back and see me. And don't die. I will kick your butt with my new dancing shoes if you die. Understood, I said. She did one last soft shoe routine, gestured to us like, over to you, then raced off to muster the 5th cohort for a long day of tap dancing. Watching her go, I marveled at how much had happened to all of us since Lavinia Asimov first escorted us into camp just a few days before. We had defeated 2 emperors and a king, which would have been a strong hand in even the most cutthroat poker game. We had put to rest the souls of a god and a sibyl. We had saved a camp, a city, and a lovely pair of shoes. Most of all, I had seen my sister, and she had restored me to good health. Or what passed for good health for Lester Papadopoulos. As Reyna might say, we had added quite a bit to our good things column. Now Meg and I were embarking on what might be our last quest with good expectations and hopeful spirits. Or at least a good night's sleep and a dozen scones. We took one final trip into New Rome, where Tyson and Ella were expecting us. Over the entrance of the bookstore, a newly painted sign proclaimed, Cyclops Books.
Yay! Tyson cried as we came through the doorway. Come in! We are having our great opening today.
Grand opening,
Ella corrected, fussing over a platter of cupcakes and a bunch of balloons at the information desk.
Welcome to Cyclops Books and Prophecies, and also an orange cat.
That wouldn't all fit on the sign, Tyson confided.
It should have fit on the sign, Ella said. We need a bigger sign.
On top of the old-fashioned cash register, Aristophanes yawned, as if it was all the same to him. He was wearing a tiny party hat and an expression that said, I am only wearing this because demigods don't have phone cameras or Instagram.
Customers can get prophecies for their quests, Tyson explained, pointing at his chest, which was covered even more densely with Sibylline verse. They can pick up the latest books, too.
I recommend the 1924 Farmer's Almanac, Ella told us. Would you like a copy? Ah, maybe next time, I said. We were told you had a prophecy for us? Yep, yep.
Ella ran her finger down Tyson's ribs, scanning for the correct lines. The Cyclops squirmed and giggled.
Here, Ella said, over his spleen.
Wonderful, I thought. The prophecy of Tyson's spleen. Ella read aloud.
O son of Zeus, the final challenge face, the tower of Nero, two alone ascend, dislodge the beast that hast usurped thy place.
I waited. Ella nodded.
Yep, yep, yep. That's it.
She went back to her cupcakes and balloons.
That can't be it, I complained. That makes no poetic sense. It's not a haiku. It's not a sonnet. It's not... Oh.
Meg squinted at me.
Oh, what?
Oh, as in, oh no. I remembered a dour young man I'd met in medieval Florence. It had been a long time ago, but I never forgot someone who invented a new type of poetry. It's terza rima.
Who?
Meg asked. It's a style Dante invented in the Inferno. Three lines. The first and the third line rhyme. The middle line rhymes with first line of the next stanza.
I don't get it, Meg said.
I want a cupcake,
Tyson announced. Face and place rhyme, I told Meg. The middle line ends with ascend. That tells us that when we find the next stanza, we'll know it's correct if the first line and third lines rhyme with ascend. Terza rima is like an endless paper chain of stanzas, all linked together. Meg frowned.
But there isn't a next stanza.
Not here, I agreed, which means it must be somewhere out there. I waved vaguely to the east. We're on a scavenger hunt for more stanzas. This is just the starting point.
Hmph.
As always, Meg had summarized our predicament perfectly. It was very much humph. I also did not like the fact that our new prophecy's rhyme scheme had been invented to describe a descent into hell.
The Tower of Nero,
Ella said, repositioning her balloon display.
New York, I bet.
Yep.
I suppressed a whimper. The harpy was right. We would need to return to where my problems began. Manhattan, where the gleaming triumvirate headquarters rose from downtown. After that, I would have to face the beast who had usurped my place. I suspected that line didn't mean Nero's alter ego, the beast, but the actual beast, Python, my ancient enemy. How I could reach him in his lair at Delphi, much less defeat him, I had no idea.
New York.
Meg clenched her jaw. I knew this would be the worst of homecomings for her. Back to her stepfather's house of horrors, where she'd been emotionally abused for years. I wished I could spare her the pain. But I suspected she'd always known this day would come.
and like most of the pain she had gone through, there was no choice but to, well, go through it.
Okay, she said, her voice resolute. How do we get there?
Oh!
Tyson raised his hand. His mouth was coated in cupcake frosting.
I would take a rocket ship.
I stared at him. Do you have a rocket ship? His expression deflated.
No.
I looked out the bookstore's picture windows. In the distance, the sun rose over Mount Diablo. Our journey of thousands of miles could not begin with a rocket ship, so we'd have to find another way. Horses? Eagles? A self-driving car that was programmed not to fly off highway overpasses? We'd have trust in the gods for some good luck. Insert ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha here. And maybe, if we were very fortunate, we could at least call on our old friends at Camp Half-Blood once we returned to New York. That thought gave me courage. Come on, Meg, I said. We've got a lot of miles to cover. We need to find a new ride. This is Robbie Damond. We hope you've enjoyed this Honor Bridge production of The Trials of Apollo, Book 4, The Tyrant's Tomb, by Rick Riordan. This program was directed by Christina Rooney, executive producer Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2019 by Rick Riordan. Production copyright 2019, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.